This is Kate Magruder. It is July 23rd, 2018. I'm at the Grace Hudson Museum, and I'm interviewing for the Oral History Project, Promise of Paradise, Back to the Land Stories in Mendocino County. Could you introduce yourself?
My name is Will Siegel.
You tell me where and when you were born.
I was born in Los Angeles, California in 1951 at the Queen of Angels Hospital.
And when and why did you come to Mendocino County?
I came to Mendocino County in 1976. I actually resided in Lake County, right very close to the county line, and had a Mendocino County address and a Lake County residence. It was in the mountains above Potter Valley near Lake Pillsbury.
And why did you come here? What had been happening in your life? What propelled you here?
I was motivated to move to the country. I was motivated to want to be in a more rural setting. And it was important for us, and I say us, it was with my now wife, Ellie Siegel, and two other partners named Rick Hart and now passed away, Brian Callahan. And the four of us were looking for property that we could have livestock on. And the property we chose is 80 acres approximately and has some rolling grasslands interspersed with some forested mixed conifer forest at 2,800 feet, overlooking Lake Pillsbury and directly looking at Snow Mountain. We were suckers for a view.
And how did you find that view?
Well, we were looking for real estate, and we were shown time and time again rural property that was dominantly brushland. And since we had a desire to have horses, that didn't seem to be appropriate. I know we could have cleared land and planted pasture, but that wasn't what we were looking for. And so this piece of property was perfect for us because of the grassland. And one of its pitfalls was it was dependent on a very low yield well for domestic water.
Had you been brought up to think that you would live a life like this? Is this what you expected as you were growing up in Los Angeles in the 50s?
Well, as I grew up in Los Angeles in the 50s, I didn't really think about moving to a rural piece of property. But by the time the 60s were ending, and I was a latent teenager, I had a very large desire to remove myself from the urban atmosphere and be in a rural context. And although I had no previous experience, I had the faith in my friends and my lady that I was with, and I thought we'd figure it out as we went along.
What was going on in the world at that time and in your life at that time that you decided to move here?
In 1970s, I was going to school at Sonoma State College. And one of my first school assemblies I went to was actually a presentation in the gymnasium about the growth of Santa Rosa. And it was mapped out to me what was going to happen to this rural setting that was surrounded the college. And right then and there, I decided that I was not going to live in Sonoma County and that I would need to move to a more remote location.
And when you moved to that location near Lake Pillsbury, did you have a home to live in? What did you do? How did you literally live?
Well, one of the requirements for the property was that it had a cabin. It actually had two cabins and a little shed that they kept some hay, the previous owners kept some hay in for a small horse. The cabin we were going to live in was not livable at the time. It needed a new roof and it needed some other things. We didn't have running water at the cabin, and it was about, I would guess, 5 years before we got to develop running water down to our cabin from our low yield well that was located on top of the ridge, where our cabin was about 50 or 60 feet below that ridge top. So we depended on generators to pump the well and stainless steel barrels to tote our water in. So this was kind of our lifestyle for the first 5 years or so.
How did you make money?
Well, a bit of an idealist. I don't know. I thought it was going to fall from the sky. Everyone needs money to live on. And we first depended on a pittance of money that Ellie, my lady at the time, and now my wife, was receiving unemployment insurance from the job that she was doing when she left Sonoma County. She also had a house with her previous husband in Topanga Canyon, and she was receiving a small amount of rent money from that. That was our means of survival. I didn't have any gainful means of employment. I was a musician. I still am a musician, and I'm glad to say that it all worked out good, because we were doing gigs and performing and driving all over Lake and Mendocino County to do these performances and really not making much money, certainly not enough money to live on. But that got better, I think it was about in 1982 or so, when I started teaching guitar, and I was very fortunate to get a job at the local music store, Bandbox Music. That was very fortunate for me, and it happened in a serendipitous way that goes to show you that things do work out if you keep your eye on the prize. So as I walked into the music store one day to put a little postcard on the bulletin board asking people if they needed a guitar instructor, and I would be glad to teach them guitar, and the owners of the store were talking, I overheard them talking about who will they get to replace the current instructor who was going off to a music school. I turned around and I told them that I taught guitar. And the owner of the store, a very critical man, very knowledgeable man, asked me what made me think that I could teach guitar. And I said, well, I don't know. I've been studying with a teacher in Sonoma County named Tony Napoli for the last 2 years. And when I mentioned Tony's name, the door flew open, because Tony had a reputation of being a quality instructor. And actually, the owners of the store were going down to Santa Rosa to take lessons from Tony, not to learn how to play guitar, but to learn how he taught guitar. Months later, when I went back to visit Tony and take some refresher lessons, I mentioned this to him, and he said, I thought those people were awfully weird. I couldn't figure them out. They didn't seem to really want to play, but they kept coming to their lessons. By that experience that I had and the instructor I had, that put their faith in me immediately. And Russ then told me if I was going to teach at the store, that he would teach me how to teach, and I would need to take these lessons from him before he would allow me to teach people in his store on the guitar.
Had you formed a band yet?
Yes. I formed a band nearly immediately when we got there. By the end of the summer, we were playing folk music, fiddle tunes. It was very popular in those days. Willie Nelson was certainly not quite crested yet. He was gaining popularity. Bluegrass was very important music to young people. There was an album, Will the Circle Be Unbroken, by the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, that influenced a lot of people to reach back into these archives and learn this classic music. So we kind of used that as a springboard, and it was the Partners of the Land. Our partner Rick played mandolin, and Ellie played fiddle and guitar, and I played guitar and dobro, and we started playing around at small places, and soon we added a very fine fiddler named Gus Gorelick, and then a bass player who was instrumental in coordinating my relationship, you might say, with our community in Ukiah, because the bass player's name was Bud Chase, and he was the caretaker at Greenfield Ranch. Bud knew a lot of people. He had already lived there for a number of years and was really a great bass player and spent his whole life. He was quite a bit older than I, and he'd already spent a lifetime learning music and playing jazz classical tunes, very well versed musician, played upright bass as well as tuba. So we were lucky to meet Bud, and he played with us for the remainder of his time in Mendocino County. And he and his wife, Jana, moved away to Eugene, Oregon. And one thing led to another. You know, bands don't last forever. They come and they go. And we still play kind of with the same open-ended itinerary of play what we want to play. We don't really specialize in one style.
Can you tell me how you met Buffalo Bob Britton?
Buffalo Bob Britton was a key member of our community in the mid-70s. And I was wanting to reach out to musicians, and Buffalo Bob had created a concert series at the Redwood Valley Grange. And I believe it was a monthly thing. And he was quite an entertainer and loved to share his music with the community. And it was at a time when it was really received quite well. The acoustic music, once again, was part of the recipe for this. Guitars, fiddles, banjos, no electric guitars at the time. And I met Bob, and I would go to his house for his jam sessions. And since I played the dobro, which was a country instrument that not many others played, I was kind of accepted, you might say, in these jam circles. And I also had a lot of sound equipment by then, or not a lot, but enough to do a band. And he would hire me to run sound for his band. And he'd also hire my band to kind of open up for his band at these Sunday concerts. And so as it started out really comfortable, compatible, but then as my little group gained popularity, there was a bit of a, how shall we say, a little conflict. It got really wild when he got into a fight with his fiddle player, and his fiddle player, Gus Gorelick, was giving my wife Ellie fiddle lessons. He showed up with a black eye, told Ellie that he got into a fight with Buffalo Bob. He didn't want to play with them anymore. And she said, well, come play with us. And so he did. He joined our band. And before we knew it, we were not so friendly with Buffalo Bob. It's kind of unfortunate, but it just added a little wrinkle to what we were doing. They would check on us and make sure we had all of our liquor license applied for when we'd go out and do dances, as they were looking at little ways to overturn our boat. And we survived, and they survived, and eventually Bob and his wife Carmen moved away to Atascadero. Eventually, I kind of went on to a different style of music, playing more rock and roll with electric guitars in bars and for dances. One of the key things in that era was Bob had a harmonica player with him named Les Beck, and Les and I became friends. And, 15 years later or so, we started playing together, and we still do play together, and Les is a fine musician and friend. I'm glad we are still compadres. We also participated in a handful of play productions for Ukiah Players Theater, and those became, you might say, bookmarks or hallmarks in the memories of our life as performers here in Mendocino County.
What were some of those musicals?
Well, Les and I first played for Grapes of Wrath, and then shortly after that, we played in Woody Guthrie's American Song and Patsy Cline's Always. Also, I got to participate in a couple of the first Courage Parades that paved the way to Space Theater, working with Paulette and Laurel. The community theater has really been a conduit for my creativity at times, something that has been very dear to my heart.
When you first moved here and began to come into Ukiah, which was the nearest big town, how did the community that had already been here, that was established, how were you received?
When I first moved to Mendocino County, we would need to come to Ukiah for groceries and chainsaw repair and all those things that these young homesteaders needed and required. And we were traveling from an area that had no community. So we came to Ukiah, and I would see people that I thought might have like interests, but everybody was so busy picking up their stuff and going back out to their property that I became an early member of the Homestead Exchange. The Homestead Exchange was the co-op in its very early stages, and it had a couple different locations before it became the Ukiah Co-op. So we'd shop there, we'd get bulk items there, and we'd go stop at a market and get some things, whatever else we needed, and go back out to the property. So I felt like there was not a lot of time in these little tours to get things done, to have social engagements. And I felt that the people I met were in the same situation. So it wasn't until the end of the summer of 76, they were tearing down the old Ukiah High School. And there was a lot of wood and building items available for people to buy at a very reasonable price. And I met people at that event. That went on for weeks, if not months. But I met people that helped me sort wood, load wood into our truck. And that was one of the events that summer that made me feel like I was maybe part of a larger community. Of course, music helps you into that too. As you get gigs, you meet people. That was a blessing because music brings people together and allows you a social outlet as well as a creative outlet.
Did you have any interaction when the building code wars were going on?
In Mendocino County, there was a struggle over building permits and unpermitted structures. And a lot of our neighbors in Potter Valley were very involved with that. And our property was over the hill in Lake County, and we had no pressure from Lake County government to come within code. So the building wars did not affect us directly. We did realize, though, that somebody was watching us because we built a cabin. One of our partners built a cabin, and it was unfinished, but approximately 6 months after the cabin was up, we got a visit from the Lake County Land Assessor's Office, and he said, "We want to look at that cabin you got over there." And I said, "How do you know we have the cabin?" He said, "Well, we do our little aerial flyovers. We saw it." I said, "Oh, okay. Go ahead, take a look." And they took a look, and they basically just added it to the assets of the property and told us whether it's finished or not, next year it'll be considered a finished building. So it's remained somewhat unfinished to this day. But we have a young woman living in it. I hesitate because she used to be a lot younger and she grew up there on the property, but she's no longer 12. She's now close to 50. So, time passes and we do our best to keep up with the demands.
Besides the community that you were finding here who resonated with you and your values, the community that was already here when you came, the old guard, basically, the old established community, the agricultural community, the people that you would interact with at stores and things who owned businesses or government agencies, what was your sense of their reception of you and everybody else who was coming in at the time?
When we moved to this rural area and started to interact with the population, there was some very remarkable interaction and some a distant interaction. I think what stands out the most is how we were a novelty to some of the people who were there. When we would need to get our chainsaw fixed or sharpened or a new chain, we went to the Ukiah Saw Shop, which was, I believe, out in Talmadge, on Talmadge Road. And the owner there, Bob Wofford, and his son-in-law, Mahaffey, ran the store. And we would go in there, And when I say we, remember there's four land partners. One fairly attractive, young, short little girl, about 5'2", and then myself being 5'7", wild-haired and woolly-bearded, and our partner Rick, who is about 6'5", wild-haired and woolly-bearded, and our fourth partner Brian Callahan, who was not so bearded, but quite a sparkle in his eye and quite a wealth of knowledge for a young man, that he too was 6'+. And they couldn't quite figure out how this one girl serviced three guys like that. And I think their fantasies went nuts. But they would love to interact with us and just chit-chat and try to get to know us because they couldn't figure it out. So they were real nice to us in that fact that we were a novelty. A lot of the other things I remember from that time is people would open up to you if you were spending money at their place. They welcomed the exchange. But in my eyes, I had a hard time warming up to the ambience of Ukiah, because Ukiah to me felt like a tire town. There's hamburgers and there was tires, lots of tire shops, and I couldn't quite figure out what else was here. Didn't seem to be a lot for us. But then slowly, as I got more acquainted with more people like myself, and we were able to have events, fundraisers, or interactions in the music bars that we were playing at, it started to feel a little bit more like home. Within 5 years, we were out of money, and we needed to come to town and get a job, and that's when I had the good fortune of getting the job at the music store. Being in a music store is seeing 20 different students a week, most of them from families that have been here. So I got to know people that way. And also lots of people from Boonville and Willits, they'd come down and either buy things at the music store or take lessons. So that was a very fortunate time to have a place to be where you could meet people that were interested in music. It was easier after I got adjusted slowly. And we were renting rooms and houses. Our friends Larry Peterbaugh, who lived here his whole life, he and his family, he was a school teacher. He taught music in Ukiah school system and also played in the community bands. So we started participating in the community bands. First, I was the bass drum player or the cymbal player for the concert band at the college, and then I started playing guitar with the jazz band and sat in that chair for 5 or 6 years before I gave it up.
When you look back on those early years, is there an experience or a moment that epitomizes what that was all about, what that phenomenon of coming here for you, that just crystallizes it for you?
Well, the experiences that we have are so numerous. And I think back what some pivotal experiences were that made me feel like I was part of a larger community. And I definitely say it was the benefit dances that I play at for Ukiah Players Theater and the co-op, because there was, now you're singing to the choir. They're all people that have like interests. Most of them were back to the landers, as you might call them. People looking for a rural life that was not so crowded with all the urban necessities, distractions. Lots of us were looking for a place that we could relate to nature in our daily life. So playing these benefits brought me together with a larger community who had a like set of values.
When you were playing with Buffalo Bob and there were younger upcoming musicians or aspiring musicians who were participating with you or observing you, and what happened? What was that kind of cross-pollination or pollination?
When I started playing with Buffalo Bob, there was a need for me to be playing with other musicians. But by the time I had met Bob, he had already been entrenched in the community. So his community concerts at the Redwood Valley Grange attracted young and old. And there was a very large group of younger people than I. I was then in my mid-20s, then early 30s. And these people were mostly in their early teens. And they loved the music so much, and Bob gave them the inspiration that they could learn these instruments and they could become musicians and play quite well. There was an interest and an enthusiasm that spread like wildfire. In between the breaks of bands at these concerts, the parking lot would be full of people jamming. And likewise, in those days, my group and my fiddle player, we toured around to fiddle contests and bluegrass festivals. And there too, in between the events outside or in the side wings of the halls, there's large groups of people jamming and sharing music. And it's not something you see so much these days around here. I'm sure it goes on in places where this type of music is growing and is still fertile. But it gave people, once again, music, acoustic music, something to do, something to excel at, something they could have for themselves. And nobody can take that away.
As you look back, was there a downside? Was there something that in your expectations for coming here and the life that you wanted that just couldn't happen, that just didn't happen, or a nadir moment?
Well, once again, as I look back at my experiences, and I have a lot of gratitude for all the good luck and all the good people that I've met, there's been some dark times and some times where you feel like, what am I doing here? So I mentioned one of my partners. His name was Brian Callahan. Brian was about 4 or 5 years younger than I, and he was a fantastic artist. He was an outdoorsman. He handled livestock well. He could butcher a cow. He could butcher just about anything cleanly. He could process the skin. And this is a young man who at the time was in his early 20s. And you might ask yourself, well, how did such a person learn these skills? Well, Brian came from a family where his father was a decorated general or colonel in the Air Force, and was also hired by the Kennedy administration and wrote some speech elements for Kennedy. And when the Bay of Pigs episode happened, this man was so scared for his life and the life of his children that he had four boys, but he took the three oldest ones and moved to Argentina. There, he locked himself in a cabin and went cold turkey and got over his alcohol addiction. Meanwhile, his kids were riding and running around the pampas with gauchos and learning about boloing ostrich and butchering cattle, sharpening knives, working rawhide. And after 2 years of that, Brian was quite adept at these skills. And when we met him, he had come back from Argentina and he was kind of looking for something as well. And so we met him and got in Carmel and then got reacquainted when he became a caretaker out at Stillwater Cove on the Sonoma coast. And then he moved in with us in Sonoma County. So he became a key figure in looking for property because he had two horses at the time. And we enjoyed riding horses, and so we wanted more. But Brian also took a liking to hang gliding. And Brian was troubled with not having enough money to subsist upon. And he ended up moving back to Southern California to work with his brother, doing some construction and learning more about hang gliding. And we got a phone call one day that Brian had took a fall and he was at Lake Elsinore, and he didn't wear a parachute. His father told him they weren't perfected yet. And the other, a young man came up underneath him and did have a parachute, which flips you upside down. And Brian was basically flipped upside down and fell to his death. So we were minus a partner. And our other partner was also getting disillusioned with this lack of money. And how are you going to build a cabin if you don't have any money? And if you're a single man, how are you going to meet a woman if you're living way out in the boonies? So he moved back to Sonoma County. And Ellie and I wondered, what are we doing with this property? It's more than we could bear. It has a beautiful view, but it was more than we could cope with. So that was a dark time. And it was also accentuated by we grew a bit of marijuana for some cash. And son of a gun, if UPS didn't open up my banjo I was sending down to a friend that had a quarter pound of marijuana in the bell. And that coincided with that time. So my brave wife, woman, Ellie, she took the brunt of the charge. She assured the arresting officer that it was hers, and I didn't know anything about it. And then she was faced with possibly spending some jail time for this, because the probation officer felt like people had been too lenient, the court had been too lenient with these people. And it ended up that the judge gave her community service. And so once again, she put together a little music group to play at the convalescent homes and paid her debt to society. So I'm glad to see those times in the rearview mirror. And shortly after that, we have two of our current partners who came into our lives and wanted to participate with the land. And one couple wanted dearly to live on the land, which was something, by this time we were part-time in Ukiah and part-time out there. By this time we kind of knew that we weren't going to be full-timers out there anymore. So the right pieces came back, but there was some dark moments in that era that we didn't know if we were going to last.
As you look back on this and your choice to come here, how would you say that choice, living the way that you have, how has it shaped you? How has it impacted you, Will Siegel?
Well, living in the country and moving out to a rural piece of property, first thing it demands of an individual that you become multifaceted, that you become a plumber, a carpenter. Everything that needs to be done, you have to do it. So you develop a sense of self-sufficient, although you're not, but you develop a sense that you can do these things and you can become capable. And if you can keep up with the demand of running your little household or ranch, and you're a lucky person, because it's a lot of work. And you have to know a lot about everything in order to survive. Also, I think it galvanizes your sense that if you want something bad enough, it will happen and you can make it happen. Because when we moved to that property, I had no previous experience. The tools I had were shameful. We had a dull handsaw and a hatchet and a wrecking bar and a rasp and a crooked carpenter's square. And two different tape measures that were about, you know, an eighth or a quarter of an inch off from each other. So, yeah, our tool assembly is much better now.
And how do you think the fact that so many people like you came here in the 70s, how has that shaped the county? How has it impacted Mendocino County?
People who moved out to the country in the 70s all wanted I think, a little bit of the same thing, and that's to be a bit independent and to be out in a rural setting and a sense that you can do things. I think that's traits that a lot of us share.
And how has that influenced the way Mendocino County has developed since the 70s?
The people who've moved here have influenced Mendocino County in a great way. We have back to the landers that have developed to be congressmen and doctors, lawyers, all kinds of massage therapists, actors, singers. It provided a place for us to grow and to become individuals, sometimes in a professional nature and sometimes in a caring nature. I think the people really took up a number of battles at different times that have galvanized the public. Mendocino County is one of the most liberal places in California, and that's what the people like here that have moved here. So they're able to coalesce over problems and feel like we can conquer them. In the 80s, I was very active with some timber issues, timber harvest plans that were not agreeable to a large number of people, and neighborhood by neighborhood, we banded together to try to resist the onslaught of logging. And indeed, the loggers took what they could and then closed up shop. People told me 10 years before the LP mill was removed that it was going. And I couldn't believe it, because out in the woods in Mendocino National Forest, there was a steady string of logging trucks leaving that forest every day. And the mill was active 24/7. I couldn't imagine that mill being gone. And within 10 years or so, that mill, they tore it down. And you wouldn't, I mean, I guess everything comes full circle. Now it looks like there's a pot grow on it. There's greenhouses and they're tilling the fields. I don't know. Never thought that would happen, but there it is, from one money crop to another money crop. People got to survive, and in hard times, they do whatever they can to earn a dollar. Also, on the coast, we watched salmon fisheries being depleted. There's been organizations around that trying to restore salmon fisheries to keep offshore oil from appearing off our coast. We may have some new battles ahead, but I think the people here are up for it.
As we have to wrap up, is there anything else you want to add that comes to mind that should be on the record about this experience?
Well, in summing up my thoughts and my feelings about being here now after 42 years of grit and grime and living a life that isn't quite what you might have imagined it to be, but it's still a wonderful place, and we should really try to keep our neighborhoods intact as much as we can. I'm glad to be a part of it. I'm glad that I moved here when I did. I'm glad that I moved to an area that was very slow in growing. And I realize now that part of that slow growth is because of the water allotments, water development, and where it is and where it isn't. And the fact that Lake Mendocino is largely a Sonoma County commodity in water, it doesn't belong to Mendocino County. So although it's not a good thing that we don't have control of our water, but it is a good thing from my standpoint that growth has been slow. And now we watch grapes take over most of the pasture lands and pear orchards. And the future for marijuana is, I don't know. It looks like it might be bright for some people. I'm glad that maybe it's going to be harder for smaller people to make a cash crop legally, because I am disturbed about some of the land use around marijuana cultivation. But that being said, you know, I would like the trees to stand and the wildlife to remain wild.
Is there a song that jumps out to you that you loved in those early days that you, even now, but that you, that kind of evokes those early years?
Well, music to me has been so big and so ever-changing. I have a hard time grasping a particular song from the era of when we came here. I don't know, I'll throw one out that just pops in my head. Willie Nelson had a song called Sometimes It's Heaven and Sometimes It's Hell and Sometimes I Don't Even Know. So I think that was one of the songs in that early days that I enjoyed.
Can you sing that?
Oh, I could try. Sometimes it's heaven and sometimes it's hell. Sometimes I don't even know. Sometimes I take it as far as I can, and sometimes it won't even go. Okay, that's I didn't quite make it through the whole verse, but okay.
Thank you, Will.
Okay, thank you, Kate.